debate it. New York, London, Paris, Munich, everybody talk about
reaching up with Don Fess. Don Fess.
This is Don Fess, and we're reaching up again right now. All together in 204 countries with great in-person guests and music. Hollis Watkins grew up in the Mississippi of the 50s and 60s. When he was a teenager, he decided not to leave a whites-only Woolworth's lunch counter when asked. Instead, he got arrested. Still living in Mississippi, Hollis has been a civil rights leader ever since, for almost 50 years. And he's also keeping freedom music alive. My very special guest, Hollis Watkins, today.
If you missed me from the back of the bus, and you can't find me nowhere, come on up to the front of the bus. I'll be driving up there. In the front, I'll be driving up there. I'll be driving up there. Come on up to the front of the bus. I'll be driving up there. If you missed me from Jackson State and you can't find me nowhere, come on up to Ole Miss. I'll be studying up there. At Ole Miss, I'll be studying up there. I'll be studying up there. Come on up to Ole Miss. I'll be studying up there. If you miss me from the picket line and you can't find me nowhere, come on down to City Hall. I'll be serving as the mayor. I'll be serving as the mayor. I'll be serving as the mayor. Come on down to the City Hall. I'll be serving as a mayor.
Thanks for joining us here in Portland. I've read your history, and I know it's probably a lot more than we can go into in this interview, but Hollis, if we could start off, let's go back to around 1960, 61. You're in Mississippi. Kind of paint a picture for us of what it's like.
Well, at that time in Mississippi, all of the facilities for the most part were segregated. Black and white people would be arrested if they were caught meeting in the same place. Police would come and arrest everybody that was there. The lunch counters were only for white people. Bus stations, train stations had a white side and a black side. The schools were completely segregated. The books in the schools for the black children were basically obsolete books that had been used by white students. In Mississippi at that time, even though Mississippi had a black population nearly 50%, the only place in Mississippi that there were any black elected officials were in a little small town of Mound Bayou, Mississippi. Less than 4% of all of the blacks at that time that was of voting age were registered to vote. Only 3 black lawyers for the entire state. So Mississippi was a segregated state. Racism prevailed throughout the state.
Now, there was a civil rights movement, though, going on elsewhere, I guess, prior to Mississippi, right?
Well, there were a few things going on, but not a lot of things that was going on prior to that. You had the NAACP that was doing different things in different places, and you had the bus boycott, you know, in Alabama. But in terms of movement activities on a wide range, it was not very much.
How did you personally get involved in civil rights movement in your home state of Mississippi?
I got involved because I knew changes needed to be made in the system, and I was in search of answers. So I heard that Dr. King was coming to my state, and I was in search of Dr. King, and that's when I ran up on Bob Moses, who was with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and I found him, and I joined up with him.
And what was the first part of your involvement? Tell us what it was like, because I know it would eventually lead to you being in jail at least twice, and at least for more than a month, right?
Well, the first involvement was strictly about trying to get black people registered to vote. The involvement that led to me getting in jail the first time had to do with me deciding to go to the public library and integrate the library. But the library was closed, and as a result of the library being closed, we came back to the Woolworths lunch counter and attempted to order a cup of coffee at the Woolworths lunch counter and was arrested and served 34 days in jail as a result of that.
Now, for those people who aren't old enough to remember, and there must be some who don't even remember Woolworths, but Woolworths was the good old 5 and 10 around the U.S., and most of them did have lunch counters. I mean, you could go in, people could go in and order a bowl of soup or a tuna sandwich or whatever. But blacks weren't allowed at those counters?
Now, blacks weren't allowed at those counters, and any time a black went to the counter to attempt to order something, then they would be arrested. It was strictly for white only.
So there you were. So you sat in at a Woolworths lunch counter, and exactly what happened?
When I sat at the counter, there was a police officer already in the store. So when I sat at the counter, the police officer immediately came and said, "You got to move on." And I said, "Am I under arrest?" And he said, "Not if you move on." So I said to him, "I prefer that I stay here until I am served." And he said, "Well, you are under arrest. Let's go. You're going to jail." And he escorted me down the street to the jail.
And how long were you in jail at that time?
That was the time that I was in jail for 34 days.
What was the charge exactly?
The charge were two or three charges. One, I know, was refusing to obey an officer. One was breach of peace, and the other one was refusing to move on when asked to move on by a police officer.
Obviously, it couldn't have been very pleasant in jail, but tell us exactly what it was like.
Well, it was not very pleasant in jail. It was the first time that I had seen inside of a jail. The first few nights actually was in a drunk tank where they stored and put the drunk people. So it was very filthy in there. Then was moved to a cell. The food was very bad. As a matter of fact, in those 34 days, I lost 18 pounds.
This was what year and how old were you?
This was in 1961, and I was 19.
So you eventually get out of jail, but you would stay active in the civil rights movement and eventually get with the Southern Leadership Conference, right?
Well, I stayed active in the movement. Shortly after getting out of jail, I went back to jail because I participated in a walkout of students from my high school. They walked out in protest of one of their fellow students not being able to go back to school because they had attempted to buy a ticket at the Greyhound bus station on what was perceived or known as the white folks' side. So when that student was not allowed to re-enter the high school, then the students had a walkout. So I participated in that, and that sent me to jail, where I spent 39 days in jail as a result of that demonstration. I continued to work as a part of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and one of their field secretaries, but I did work along with SCLC because after a period of time, SCLC had one staff person in Mississippi whose name was Anel Punder, and also there was representatives from CORE, Congress of Racial Equality, in Mississippi. So we worked together in unity for the most part, SNCC, CORE, SCLC, as well as NAACP.
Did I read somewhere, and correct me if I've got this wrong, that you objected to people coming into Mississippi from outside and that you wanted it to be all Mississippi people working for their own civil rights?
That's not exactly how it was. If it was stated like that, that was incorrectly stated. My position was that I was opposed to the 1964 Summer Project, which is referred to in most cases as Freedom Summer. I was opposed to it taking place in the manner by which it took place. I was opposed to having large numbers of young students from the North who would mostly be white coming to Mississippi in such large numbers. I wanted there to be a much smaller number that came in, where that the small number could be placed strategically in different locations, working under the guidance and direction of local people that was already doing work, knowing that when you had such large numbers of young people coming in who was excited, who was energetic, wanted to do any and everything they could possibly do in such a short time, I felt that that would retard the progress that were being made in terms of local people beginning to take initiatives, because I felt that anything that needed to be done, the young folks would say, I'll do that, I'll do this, I'll do that, let me do this and do that. And before we know it, the older people and people from Mississippi would be taking a back seat and sitting down again, realizing how hard it had been to get local people to begin to stand up, take initiative, take leadership roles. In order for them to be set down again, it would be much harder for people like myself, who never intended to leave Mississippi, to restart people all over again. So that's what my objection was about, not about people coming, but that people should not come in such large numbers.
Of course, people did come, particularly from the North, but really from all parts of the country, and of course, three civil rights workers, young civil rights workers, were murdered. Was that in Mississippi?
That was in Mississippi, and just a clarification on that, a lot of people refers to the three civil rights workers, Goodman, Cheney, and Swarner, as being summer volunteers. Cheney and Swarner were already in Mississippi working. Cheney was originally from Neshoba County, where he and Swarner was working. Goodman was the only summer volunteer that joined up with them. They were killed during that, the early phase of the 1964 Summer Project.
When that happened, did you reflect that it might be getting too dangerous for you as well to continue?
That never came across my mind. I'm from Mississippi. I'd lived in Mississippi basically all my life, and I knew the potential. That's one of the reasons I took the position when we were doing the orientation session with people up at Oxford, Ohio, was that we needed to tell all of the summer volunteers the actual facts of what to expect and what might happen. And that was that we should tell all of them that if they're coming to Mississippi, they should be prepared for at least three things: to be beaten, to be put in jail, and to possibly be killed, because all of them were possibilities. But because of someone being killed, it never came across my mind that it might be getting too dangerous. Being a young black man from Mississippi, I had seen black, or had heard of black people being killed all across the place all along. So if black people were being killed all along for doing nothing, then to find that black people who were attempting to get black people registered and be involved in civil rights were killed was nothing that would deter me from doing what I felt needed to be done.
Reaching Up with Don Fess. Don Fess. Used to be a
classic for life. There's a lot of hurting in this society, in this world, maybe even some in you. But the surest way to change things is to be a blessing. Who can you help? Be a friend to. Show some love to. Be the change you want to see. Be a blessing to someone today and every day. This message from Street Cats, One Heart for Kids, and Celebrate Radio. We will choose to be a
blessing for life. Back with Mississippi civil rights activist Hollis Watkins. Now, of course, by later in the 60s, the civil rights movement was getting kind of massive. There was the March on Washington. Eventually and sadly, there was the events of several people being killed. Malcolm X was killed. Obviously, Dr. King was killed. But you just kept fighting for equality, right?
Of course. See, I made a commitment. I grew up in a very spiritual / religious family. And I made a commitment. I grew up being taught that when you give your word, then you stick to your word. You don't back up from that. I made a commitment that I was going to fight to bring about changes. That's one of the reasons that I never left Mississippi. That's one of the reasons today, after 52 years, I'm still in Mississippi, primarily working, trying to make things better, because even though a lot of progress has been made in this country, many of the same things that we were fighting for back then is still prevalent today that need to be fought for and changed. So I'm still today, after 52 years, trying to live up to a commitment that I made.
I want to get back to in a few minutes what still needs to be done. But first I want to ask you about your involvement with what we categorize as freedom music or civil rights music. How did that come about?
Well, I look at it as songs of struggle. And that came about as a result of some of us realizing that music could be used as an organizing tool. In the South, because of the religious aspect, people were accustomed to singing songs. So that was a part of their culture. So anytime you can relate to people in that which they already know, that which they're already a part of, then it is easier for you to reach them, it's easier for you to mobilize them and ultimately organize them in whatever it is that you're doing, because you use that to help people to become unified. That's what we see in all of our churches, is that they use the music to get people on the same and one accord before the message is delivered. So I figured that we could use the same tactic as a part of are working in the civil rights movement, and that's what we did. We used some of the songs that people were accustomed to singing in the churches, and there were new songs that were written. There were some songs that had verses that we sang as a part of the church that we adapted and changed the word to, we had the same tune, but we had different words.
I was honored to know the late and wonderful singer and activist Odetta, and Peter, Paul, and Mary have been friends of mine. I can't tell you how many years. I don't want to tell you how many years, but going back to 1963, and of course, they were among those who popularized some of those songs. We're gonna play some of them as well. But I want to ask you. It's 2012, And here we are in a fairly liberated place like Portland, Oregon, which has one of the largest Occupy movements. And people have been talking since last fall, especially, although they've always been talking about it, about income equality. That's something that you're involved with, having started an organization that's dealing with that, right?
Yeah. Income equality as well as educational inequality, and you can go on, you know, employment inequality, it still exists. all over the place. And part of what happens is that too many of us is in a state of denial and won't admit what we see and admit that there are certain things that need to be changed. Just like right here now, from my understanding, there's this whole controversy over police supposedly having killed an unarmed black man, you know, several years ago. And you have police officers saying that the person that killed this person followed their instruction as a police officer. So my question is, if they follow their instruction as a police officer, then it's obvious that those laws need to be changed. Those rules and regulations need to be changed in a similar way back in the 60s, where Mississippi had a law that if black and white was meeting together in the same room, it was against the law, and they all could be arrested. So that law needed to be changed. So there are subliminal things that is happening all across the country in all of our different states. If we would come out of the state of denial and look at where we are and what's going on, we would see that many of the things that we kind of overlook and take for granted are things that still need to be dealt with. When we look at the whole thing around redistricting throughout this country, we see how people are using that as a discriminatory process rather than being fair and just as a part of the political system. And it all goes back to domination and control. Many people, we put out racism as a piece that's out there, but the main problem is not about racism, it's about domination and control. And the power that be is using racism as one of the tools to make sure that they continue to dominate and control. And we, as a people, need to come out of the state of denial and admit that there's still a lot of work that has to be done, a lot of work that need to be done. And if we are serious, then we'll figure out how to get involved in doing this work. And even if we can't get into it, we, the older people, need to give the freedom to our young people and let them do what need to be done, because they see and they are willing to do things. It may not be what we think, or they may not do it the way we want it done, but that was the case with us as a part of the civil rights movement. A lot of the older people felt that one time we're not doing it the right way, but look at the progress that came about as a result of us doing that. The beauty about that is that the older people back then didn't try to hold us back in the same way that older people today attempt to hold young people back. So I think we need to just accept that this country is a country that needs a whole new overhaul, because a system of justice is not prevailing. And at any time you don't have justice, then you're going to have confusion, you're going to have chaos. And when I say a system of justice, I'm talking about a system that deals with one another in a fair manner. And see, if a person don't feel that they have been treated fairly, they're going to always be looking for payback. And as long as somebody is looking for payback, that evil and dreadful system perpetuates itself and goes around in circles.
So with all you've seen, all you've been part of, you're obviously saying there's still a lot of work to be done, and probably it's important too, even if they do it their own way, that young people learn from the history, a history that you've been part of, for example.
Ain't no doubt about it, it's important that young people learn from our history. But the thing about it is that we should not attempt to impose what we did and the way we did it on young people or older people today, because we were dealing with the then and the there. And we need to look at it today in the context of the here and the now. What we did may be applicable in this day and time to our specific locations, and it may not. The way we did it may or may not. And everybody needs to look at it from the perspective of where they are, what it is that they're trying to do, who it is that they're dealing with, and what are the forces that's going to be opposing them. And they develop their strategy and the meaningful program of work that is specifically applicable to the area that they are doing it in. What works in Portland may not work in Mississippi. What worked in Mississippi may not work in Portland. You have to look at that, but break it down and make it applicable to you in your local situation wherever you are.
That's a lot to think about, and I hope people will start thinking about it. And like you said, what's needed, how to get it done effectively, not necessarily copying the past, but looking at the situation now. I thank you very much for opening our audience up to some of that and also giving them a background about the history that you yourself experienced. There's a lot that's happened in this country in the last 45, 50 years.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, and I'd just like to, in the spirit of the movement and in the words of a song, say to all of us out there, get on board, cheering, cheering, get on board, cheering, cheering, get on board, cheering, children, let's fight for human rights.
Well, if you don't believe that, I've been to hell.
Freedom come and it won't be long.
Just to follow me up to the parchment jail.
Freedom come and it won't be long.
Freedom,
freedom,
hey!
Freedom come and it won't be long.
Well, the one thing that we did wrong.
Freedom come and it won't be long.
Well, we stayed divided just a day too long.
Freedom come and it won't be long.
Freedom,
freedom,
hey!
Freedom come and it won't be long.
But the one thing that we did right.
Freedom come and it won't be long.
Well, it was the day we started this fight.
Freedom come and it won't be long.
Freedom,
freedom,
hey!
Freedom come and it won't be long.
This is Don Fass. Join us next weekend and keep reaching up. And be sure to tell us where you're listening. Write me at reachinguprradio@gmail.com. reachinguprradio@gmail.
This is the Celebrate Radio Network.
Radio Network.
From Seattle to Paris, Bangkok to Jerusalem.